Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Mark Teer is with us, ladies and gentlemen. He's a new friend. Mark is the founder of the investment newsletter World Money, an analyst. He's also the author of a number of books, including one I have in front of me, Becoming Rich Through the Wealth Building Secrets of the World's Master Investors. He's our new friend. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here. Tell us about what you've learned from, give us sort of a tour, a little overview of what you've learned from these top investors like Buffett and Icahn and some of those guys.
Okay, well, the way I started the research that led to this book was actually was an idea from psychology, and the idea was to study, take two or three experts in a field and find out what they all do, what they have in common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the level of mental strategies. The Buffett, Icahn, Soros, they're all great investors. They all started with nothing, which is important, something we can emulate. But of course, their investment strategies are totally opposite. You know, Buffett likes to buy stocks at a bargain price and sit on them for a long time. Soros is probably the world's greatest trader, and Icahn specializes in takeovers.
Mm-hmm.
And on the surface, none of these guys would have anything in common. But when you study the way they think about investing, what they believe about the markets, the way they approach investing, I discovered 23 commonalities, 23 things they all do. And of course, it's not about what to buy or when to buy it, it's about how to go about choosing an investment that's going to make you a lot of money.
Well, let's talk about some of those things. What are some examples of the commonality between those guys, some of the 23?
Well, one of the things they have in common is, well, certain things they do not believe that are common beliefs. For example, what I call the first deadly investment sin is the belief that you have to be able to predict what the market's going to do next in order to make money. Well, these guys don't. They do not depend on their predictions to make money or their forecasts. Another one is they don't diversify, and that's common advice you'll hear from just about everybody.
They don't diversify.
They don't diversify. They buy as much of
that's them. Kind of counterintuitive for most of us, isn't it?
Well, that's right, because of this common belief, promulgated by every investment advisor on Wall Street, that the only way to reduce risk is to diversify. Now, it's quite true. Diversification does reduce risk, but it also has the effect of reducing potential profits. Ultimately, with diversification, you'll do about the same as the market does. Maybe a little better, maybe a little worse, but you're not going to do spectacularly better. And of course, you're not going to do spectacularly worse. So it's a great strategy if you don't want to invest the time. It does take time and energy to become an investor who can do better than the market.
I remember in the 90s when Buffett explained why. And I'm trying to, help me if I'm not saying this correctly. He didn't get involved in the dot-com bubble because the first thing I heard him say was he didn't understand it. And he didn't invest in things he didn't understand. Now, two things about that, I've thought about him saying that since then. Number one, he missed an opportunity to make a lot of money. But number two, based on what you've said and what we know about him, is he doesn't sell, he just buys. And maybe he didn't get involved because he knew if he made money, he'd have to sell, and he didn't know when to get out.
Well, no, what he was saying is the truth. He didn't understand how to value tech stocks. And in fact, he once said if he was giving a paper, as a professor, and he gave a question, how can you value a dot-com stock? He said if anybody answered the question, he'd give them a fail.
Well, and he's right. But I mean, he was right to be concerned about them. He was exactly right. But that, it seems to me that what you're saying is he's not a trader. He's an investor.
No, he's more of an investor than a trader. That's correct.
And so the people who made the money in the dot-coms were the people who were the traders.
That's right. But most people approached that market, you know, got caught up in the mania and acted as if they were making investments.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up losing money, or at least losing most of their profits when the crash came.
Right.
Because they weren't traders. It was a speculative market. But this is, see, something they all these investors have in common. In fact, all great investors that I've studied have in common. They will only invest in what they understand. So why? Because when you understand the investment you're making, you can realize when it's the bargain, you can realize when it's the right time to go mm-hmm. in, and you can realize when it's the right time to get out.
Well, and you see the tea leaves in the industry and in the marketplace, don't you?
Yes, but not exactly. It's a different mentality. And let's talk about Buffett for a minute because he's easiest to relate to. When he sees a stock that's trading at 50 cents in the dollar, it has the same reaction that you would have, when you go into the supermarket, you see your favorite soap or aftershave or perfume, whatever it may be, 50% off. I mean, you just know it's a bargain. You mm-hmm. don't have to do an analysis, call your broker and so on. You just know, right? And you'd be willing to buy as much as you can because it's such a bargain. So mm-hmm. Buffett is taking the same attitude when, at those times, which are few and far between, when he sees a stock that he understands, that he knows how to value, selling at a price that he knows is a bargain. And he can have that reaction only in businesses he can understand. So he had no idea in the tech stock area when a stock was a bargain and when it wasn't. So he had no way to value them.
Especially since most of them weren't based on any kind of economics.
Well, that's right. Most of them were based on this mania and the idea that profits didn't matter. Soros and Icahn have the same attitude in the areas they understand. But again, neither Soros actually, his sidekick, Stanley Druckenmiller, lost quite a bit of money in the dot-com boom
mm-hmm.
because he got carried away. I mean, even great investors can at times get caught up in the emotions of the marketplace.
Right, right.
Generally, Icahn is another one. He specializes in certain kinds of companies, like just gone into Blockbuster. And
hold on, Mark, hold on to that thought. Folks, when we come back, one of the things that Mark noticed about these investors is that they passionately avoid risk. How can you be an investor and do that? We're going to get him to tell us about that right after these messages. The book is called Becoming Rich. Stay with us. The sugar and spice. I feel nice. Listen to the wind blow down tonight. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our new friend, Mark Teer. Mark is the author of Becoming Rich. Mark, tell us where your book's available, please.
Well, it's available in most bookshops, although they haven't sent it in Borders yet. Maybe they haven't got it out of the warehouse.
Well, I'll put in a call to those guys and see if we can't fix that.
It's in Barnes & Noble. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, of course.
And the last name is T-I-E-R.
T-I-E-R.
T-I-E-R. Mark, you have your own website?
It's www.marktier.com.
Okay. Can they find the book there? Can they learn more about it there?
Yeah, they can. And there are excerpts. A few of the chapters are up there. They can. You can have a look at them.
Good. I appreciate you making that available. MarkTier.com, ladies and gentlemen. Mark, you report that one of the things that these top investors, Buffett and Icahn and the others, that they passionately avoid risk.
That's right.
Now, how can you be an investor and avoid risk? That seems like a contradiction in terms.
Well, you can't avoid it totally, but they don't believe in another one of what I call the seven deadly investment sins. And in order to make big profits, you've got to take big risks. But Buffett says, if you can buy a dollar for 50 cents, where's the risk?
Hmm.
One of the things they're willing to do is wait. They will not invest their money, as we were talking about earlier, in something they don't understand. The flip side of the coin is they will wait as long as necessary in order to find something that they think is a great investment, is a bargain. In other words, what they're looking for is what Buffett calls high probability events. That is an investment that has a very high probability of making a lot of money and a very low probability of losing anything. Now, Soros, for example, became famous from shorting the pound sterling, who was called the man who broke the Bank of England. He first saw that as an opportunity 6 years before he actually went into the market. He waited 6 years for the right time to short the pound sterling.
Mm-hmm.
That's waiting.
Well, you point out in the book that they have infinite patience.
Infinite patience, that's right. That's crucial, because most investors feel if they're not doing something, they're not investing. But if you want to be a great investor, you know, you should wait, you should research, you should look for the bargains that can come your way, and you might only find one or two a year, but if you're positive it's a bargain, it's a good investment, and you put a reasonable amount of money into it, it's going to make a significant difference to your net worth. And that's what these guys are looking for.
One of the things that you talk about in the book is you call one of the deadly sins,
mm-hmm.
is that believing that inside information is the key to big money.
Yes, it seems like an appealing strategy. But the reality is, I mean, and of course a lot of people think that, you know, people like Buffett, Soros, Icahn, are so well connected they must be making their money with inside information, right? Or certainly using their contacts. Well, if you look at their history, when they started out, when nobody had ever heard of them, when, you know, that nobody would pick up the phone if they called, they were making a lot more as a percentage of their capital than they are today. I mean, Buffett was doing 50-60% a year in his early years, and now he's lucky if he can do 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's proof that inside information is not necessary, because inside information assumes you have some sort of contact with somebody in the business.
Right.
And these guys were doing better. I mean, if they're using inside information today, it isn't doing them any good.
Plus, it's also illegal.
Also illegal, of course.
One of the things I want to ask you is, Mark, is do you think that now these guys all made their money in the 20th century?
Yep.
If they were starting over right now as a 30-year-old, let's say, mm-hmm. could they do the same thing in the 21st century?
Oh, absolutely.
With the same philosophies?
With the same philosophies. I mean, you look at Icahn, he's just started a $3 billion hedge fund. He just wanted to blockbuster in a big way. I mean, there are always opportunities around. What, 5, 10, 20,000 stocks in the United States alone? I've done it myself. And I couldn't believe how easy it was when I had the right mental attitude to investing.
When you say you've done it, tell us what you mean. What did you do?
Well, in 1982, I stopped investing entirely because I was losing money. And I just let my money sit in the bank. And then in 1996, 1997, I began the research that led to this book. So, obviously, a key question is, does it work? Can somebody else do it? He's not one of these great guys. So I started with myself, and I went into the market. You know, I developed a strategy, went into the market in 1998, and began. I was starting at 6 months. It was a small amount of money. I think I was up 14% in 6 months. So I added and kept adding money until I put most of my net worth in there. And I've averaged, to the end of 2003, it was 26% a year. I haven't actually calculated it for the end of last year, but I had a bad year last year. I was only up about 6%. I never had a losing year in that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's a guy who was an investment dunderhead, even though I was in the investment business at the time, and I've turned myself into someone who can now just live off my investment profits. I mean, if I can do it, anyone can do it.
What's Berkshire Hathaway trading for right now? Per
Actually,
share.
I don't really know. I think it's about $80,000 a share.
Yeah. 70, what?
75,
you, and I got 20 seconds. What do you think about his idea of never splitting a stock?
What he's done is very clever. He has educated his shareholders, so the turnover is very low. It's not a speculative stock. He has an enormously loyal and faithful shareholding.
Yeah. Yeah. And a very many of them have become very rich because of him.
The people who started with Buffett early are multimillionaires today.
Thank you, Mark, for being here. Good job today. The book is called Becoming Rich. It's available wherever books are sold. We'll see you next time, Mark.
Great. Look forward to it.
Good luck to you, sir. Quick break. Right back with Ivan Meisner. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.